It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I was just busy connecting my mic, so I don't know if this is even... Does it sound okay?
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, for making your way here and checking out the episode in the series. Of course, as always, I do hope you'll hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover the new ones at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, at NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Recent episodes we've had on here, recent guests, I should say, have included Sam Kiska of Greta Van Fleet, Ian Hunter of Mott the Hoople, Lucinda Williams, Nick Hexum from 311. We had both Jeff Ament and Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam on here, Louise Post of Veruca Salt, the cast of Outlander, Esty Haim, Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age. We talked Extraction 2 on Netflix with Goshifteh Farahani, and Dragon, a Bruce Lee story with actor Jason Scott Lee. That's just some of the recent episodes you can find on the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Lior Phillips. We have a lot of history. Lior is a friend of mine. She was, and I guess is, the host of This Must Be the Gig podcast, also heard on the Consequence Podcast Network. But for the past few years, she's been writing a book for the 33 and a Third series. This one's called South African Popular Music. Now, Lior is going to take us through why she wanted to write about the history and landscape of South African music, which she's from. She's from South Africa. How the region's music has generally been driven by the political landscape that's going on at that time and that era. We'll talk about American music's influence on the genre, and the sad history behind songs like The Lion Sleeps Tonight. Now, Lior is also going to tell us why she cringes at the term world music. We'll talk about the complicated era of Paul Simon's Graceland in the 80s, but also the reciprocation between artists like Angelique Kidjo and the Talking Heads, and how Disney is trying to make up for its past with the recent releases of Black Panther and the live-action Lion King. All that and more as we talk about the new 33 and a Third book, South African Popular Music. It's Kyle Meredith with Lior Phillips.
Hi, it's such a treat to talk to you.
It's such a cool thing to be on this side of things, because our little background, you were also part of the Consequence Podcast Network for a long time with your own series, This Must Be the Place.
Yes, This Must Be the Gig.
Gig, I'm sorry, you're right, This Must Be the Gig, yeah.
But based off, this must be the place. So a good shout out in retrospect. Yes, I was. And you and I have such similar loves and interests and passion for certain types of music and artists. And that was just such a joy. It's always wonderful to have a comrade in the field. And I feel like your camaraderie at the time that podcasts weren't so huge like they are now was wonderful.
Yeah, and then literally everybody got a podcast after that point. So it's, but you're still stands. I mean, you had such great episodes, yes. And those still live out there. And beyond what we're about to talk about today, I encourage everyone to go check out that if they hadn't checked out This Must Be the Gig, because it really is a solid series.
Oh, thank you. It's so wonderful. They were just kind of 45 minutes to an hour conversations. One would say going long on really complex and incredibly extraordinary storytelling from artists that you love around the world.
Well, so the artist we love around the world sort of comes back to what you're doing now, right? Because as I mentioned, 33 and a Third, this incredible series, it's been around for a while now. You have authored a new one, and it's called South African Popular Music. And we should do the background on you because you come from South Africa.
I do. I come all the way from Cape Town, born and bred in Cape Town. And I moved to Chicago a few years ago. So thankfully, I don't know. Sometimes it's charming, the Chicagoan accent, but I'm glad to know that in my 30s, I've kind of retained the South African twang. So yeah, I'm born and bred and I miss it. I'm terribly homesick. And obviously writing a book about the vignettes across musical history of South Africa made me even more homesick. So you can imagine just sitting there listening to all the music and trying to recount all of the stories from my childhood.
Well, it's interesting because, as you said, you are telling the history. When we talk about the history, I mean, it's pretty vast, but you have done it in a way where there is a through line through this entire book. What was the story you wanted to tell? How did you want to tell it?
I've always wondered why there is this ideology surrounding Africa as this singular monolith, this gigantic beast of a place that has no delineation, where it's completely the opposite, right? You know that not only the music and the arts that come from Africa, it's each different country has its own individualism. And I really wanted to focus on the individual because that's kind of how I grew up listening. I wanted to focus on South Africa as this beautiful, rich, culturally progressive now country that, of course, the strictures of apartheid and proto-apartheid before it crushed. And I wanted to make sure that when you're thinking of South Africa and you're thinking of its music, you are educated and you start getting so passionate about these beautiful melodies and lyricism that you will never hear anywhere else in the world unless it's influenced and inspired off. And that happens a lot. And you can hear that in a lot of Western music. So I really wanted to try and let people in on this beautiful country's music, but also really shine a light on these artists who, overcame really dark times. So I wanted a little bit of a balance.
And that is actually what I took from it, because to tell the story of African music is to tell the political story of Africa, South Africa, within a lot of this. I mean, to read artist after artist, how much of it is about overcoming a certain oppression that was happening at that time. I mean, you know, I imagine there was also just kids playing in a garage like anywhere else in the world. But in this bigger picture, does that feel like that is the most important part? Is not exactly what I'm trying to say, but sort of that's always sitting in the background one way or the other, I guess it feels like.
I mean, it's South Africa in relation to political music, past and present and current and future and all of the above. It is, those strictures sometimes meant that even if it wasn't overtly political, even if moments weren't that person playing ball out in their garage in their driveway, conveying music of a non-white culture became that protest in and of itself. And isn't that just glorious? It's exactly what it's meant. It's meant to move you. Some people listen to a song and they are involuntarily flailing their arms and crying and or just sitting there in shock. And that music and art is meant to move you. And so as time passed, that movement towards music that more directly addressed politics acted like the fuel to that, if I can say, protest fire, you know, like I think of Soweto Blues. And I think at the time it's impossible to talk about the one and the other. And I know you've spoken before to some of your guests about, can you separate the art from the artist? And I think that, you know, in this regard, some critics, especially when you talk about Chapter 11, which I kind of lean heavily on, Kwaito and Gorm and I'm a Piano, critics argue that those kind of strains of music now are political as well, even though it seems more of like crafting an escapist reality. It's definitely, it's the new world that apartheid no longer has its hold on.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Lior Phillips.
I was even recently talking to an artist, Vic Tony, who's sort of, you know, he had his blow up moment in the past year or so. And that's it, because he's of a younger generation and grew up in a very different culture, you know, than the few generations before him. But still hearing even from him, like, these sound like pop songs, you know, on one hand, and then you get into the story and it's always there. It's always somehow, you know, in the roots of what he's talking about. That's still impressive.
And I think that there's a lack of, course, we don't want to focus on the dark times, but political activism isn't dark. It isn't something that should weigh heavily. And when people infuse that into their music, whether you know it or not, because there's so many artists in our lives that, you know, look at Brenda Fassie, an amazing pop star from South Africa who passed away tragically at 39, I think it was. And, you know, she could have been like an Amy Winehouse of her time. Even if it isn't there, in hindsight, in retrospect, without words, it's still going to simmer to the surface, because Black people and people of color in South Africa weren't given the same chance. And in spite of that, look at the music that they were able to make. And the democratization of music making now is so fascinating. And you look at Amir Piano stars, you look at Kwaito stars, and they're sharing tools with one another. You don't need oppression in the arts and culture. It doesn't need to bring them down anymore. And it's just so, it was such a joy to get to that level within writing the book, almost like a little bit of a fourth wall. Because you know, you're a listener, and then you put this work into a hobby, and then it becomes a profession. And it was such a beautiful realization for me personally as well, to just come to a reckoning with myself of this music is in my blood. And that's kind of why I wanted to write about it to begin with, because it's intuitive. I didn't need to start off learning at a university about, you know, African music. I could just draw from my childhood. But gosh, the things that I learned along the way, endless.
Yeah, right. And there are things that we thought we knew, like the song that we, of course, you start early on this with the song that we come to know as The Lion Sleeps Tonight. Like, I always sort of knew that there was much more history there than I was aware of. But getting Solomon Linda and the loss of, what am I looking at, at least $15 million in royalties through their life and career, because that song was just yanked and compromised and turned into something else without, you know, the due credit ever going there. And that's just the beginning
Yeah, it's just the beginning, and I start there. I purposefully start there because it was as shocking to me. I even knew the story, but then researching it more and talking to more journalists and people who were around at that time, and artists and musicians, it was impossible not to start like that. It was my chapter one. You know, kind of like, here I am, let's talk about this. But it was also a frightening way to start because, again, you're telling the story that not a lot of people know. Not a lot of people know the details of. And I always, in terms of reading, I love getting to a book. It's so nice being celebrated as a reader. And that's why I wanted to start there, because I feel like that's celebrating another artist in a moment in time when they were not given the dues that they deserved. And it's just impossible to think of now, but it's happening as we speak to many other artists. And I mean, that song's just incredible.
That's one of the yeah, right.
The old timers, right?
Yeah, that's one of the greatest of all time. And it's interesting just to hear even how, you know, certain styles come up. You know, just an example, like we know rock music and sort of how that is birthed around here. And thinking about how British kids in the 50s and 60s, you know, with the music coming over on boats and everything, and how that ended up, you know, furthering rock and roll in that way. For South African music and Western music, because in one sense, I guess is what I'm getting to here, is there seems something very insular, at which, you know,
right,
is a great power that it had. Was it being influenced by Western music back then in the same way that the Brits were? Did you find that?
I love this thought process that you have right now, because I feel like that's the same question I had to ask myself in writing it. I don't know if I have a definitive answer. I think that, you know, like when I have stories of my dad getting smuggled over from his friends visiting London, him getting, you know, tapes of Rodriguez, you know, I'm not sure if anyone's familiar listening of Searching for Sugar Man, who I have the writer and the man who, Sugar Siegerman, who went after to find him. I have him in my book. And you look at all of the ways in which people found music, and it just makes you, it made me question that. I think it's a two-parter. There's obviously, we have to talk about cultural boycotting, and there were so many structures in place to forbid people to listen to music from outside for no reason other than it was maybe a little bit provocative, it was a little unusual, it was foreign. And also South Africa is typically quite a religious country. So I think looking at somebody like a Miriam Makeba, who had to flee and seek asylum because she was, you know, a political activist, she started hiding in her, you know, her influences. And so she was able to take that penny whistle, the tin whistle, and almost mimic it with her voice. You know, her voice became the penny whistle. So even if anyone might have thought that she was being so influenced, she still brought it around and made it so African. And then as the years went on, you know, more movies were shown, soundtracks came out, you know, the 90s, like 90s sound, 80s and 90s soundtracks.
I was obsessed with it for a while. Just the idea.
Obsessed.
Yeah, right, of Africa. It was just, and it's what you're talking about at the beginning here. It's that why we're, you know, for our size thing, you know, I'm in the middle of Kentucky, you know, it was a magical land and it was so far away.
And it still is magical and it still is far away, but the connection to our spirit, you know, a spirit of a listener, and this sounds cliche as heck, but a spirit of a listener is connected beyond the boundaries. And that's why I absolutely cringe, like my entire body just cringes up like a pretzel when I hear the term world music, because that romanticizes the vastness of our world, which it is geographically, but we are so connected, much more than anyone cares to know. And that segregation was racist and political. And if you are a listener wanting to get into music outside of that Western scope, it's daunting, right? It's in a different language. These people grow up in different environments. It's hard to find that connection. But once that music is put on and played, that's the golden carpet, right? You're off. And I think that hesitation by labeling, it was necessary at the time. I still understand why those genre labels were given, but we can pass them now. We can find whatever we want to find. We can put, prioritize our playlists and in any way we want, at any age we want. And I think people did that in South Africa, coming up in the 70s and 80s. They were starting to hear it on the radio. They were starting to hear it in taxi cabs. And that started, this revolution of them thinking, hang on, we don't need to look at Western music. We can just look around. And we've got the talent. We've got the right stories. And is it unusual sometimes for a non... if somebody's ear isn't tuned to it, sure, but so is techno. So, right. so is krautrock. All these, and it isn't about training one's ear. It's about just giving it a chance, because it really is so enriching, and I still like to romanticize it. Like, I don't think it's a bad thing. These artists are incredible.
Like, so much was taken one way, but this time it felt like we in the Western, in America, we took more than we gave. I grew up in the 80s, and that's talked about in here, because this is the time of Graceland. This is the time of Peter Gabriel and Bono, and eventually Sun City, and what Little Steven was doing over there. And on one side, I get it, because you find this sound that you've never heard before. And if you're an artist, you're always seeking for what excites you. And once you're excited about it, you're like, I have to try this myself. And the words cultural appropriation come out later. And you have to sort of look back on it and go, did I? And I say this as, not for myself, I've never made the music, but for the people who did, that had to be a question. And that's a tricky question, right? Because one hand, you're an artist being excited about something new, but you get to go into those details in this book about then what did that mean to the culture? What did Graceland mean to the people that were there and the boycotts that were happening? Like, that seems to me that was a really important, it had to be an important part of the story.
It was, in a way. I was like, do I leave this in? Do I take it out? Because a part of me wants to say to you, like, yes, it absolutely is pivotal. And then a part of me is like, without it, we carried on. So that, I think, was the most fascinating thing about writing that chapter. I wrote it also all willy-nilly. I kind of started that chapter and then went back because I was getting so opinionated and so like ragey about it. And then I slowed down and I did more research. I spoke to more people and it shifted my perspective. I love Paul Simon. I love everything that he did, but I do believe in cultural boycotting and I don't believe in cultural appropriation. And who sets the limitations for that artist? Are they right in doing this because they are curious? Sure, we applaud curiosity, but the limitations and the dimensions for him bringing aboard those South African artists and going there at a time when he shouldn't have, it's so iffy. It's a line drawn by the person doing the action. And that always makes you question, where was everybody else in that sense? But if you talk to any musician now who was a part of that session, They are only too proud and joyful and appreciative for that time. They were paid well. They couldn't imagine their lives without that experience of Graceland. So then you get stuck right back in, am I meant to look at this? So it's hard to look at anything with a lens that feels clear nowadays. But I know that when you look at the artists needing the rights that they deserve and getting the financial respect, I think that anything will work if you can start at that point. And I do believe that a part of him was really naive, but it would not fly in this world that we live in. Thank God it wouldn't fly. We have much more consequences that we can look at historically now. And I'm not sad it happened, but I definitely feel like, why then? You know, why then? Why did it happen then?
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Lior Phillips.
There is a fun turnaround that eventually, you know, as we talk about, because another one of those artists that you get to touch on are the Talking Heads and David Byrne.
Yeah.
The Talking Heads happen, and then you can tell that they are definitely themselves influenced by African music. And then eventually Angélique Kidjo covers the Talking Heads.
Oh,
right.
We love her. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So there ended up being this, what's the word, reciprocation, you know, circuitous thing that eventually happens. Like I feel like there's at least artistically speaking, and I am probably dodging the political parts of this on this specific question, but eventually, artistically speaking, there's a bit of a happy ending.
Absolutely. I mean, I love that you mentioned Angélique, because what a force. If anyone listening has not heard her, which I think is impossible at this point, it's any album in any sequence is your gateway. She, you know, when I chatted to her for my show, I spoke to her about this, and that was such a great way into also me writing my proposal for the book, because she has such a beautiful way of seeing something that could actually terrify an artist. You know, she loves Miriam Makeba. She loved the Talking Heads. She was like, I'm going to flip this around and do it in my way without anyone saying, no one can say a thing. And she has every right to. And I think that she showcases as an African artist, and actually more so an international artist, really. She showcases that you really can be equally inspired, even though I can imagine listening to Western music versus the music from your uncle, you know, playing in the living room is not as maybe enriching for you. But listen, it's all part of a story that enmeshes within and of itself. It's the most beautiful thing to be able to trace this line now, that people have been inspired, then influenced, then turn around, inspire and influence. It's such a beautiful way to see the industry going. And South Africa does live in isolation sometimes because it's such a small industry. And geographically, it is so far for artists from America and the UK to travel there without making it this big thing. And I think a person like Angélique just knew exactly what she was doing with that, you know? She's just really, and you know, David also, just a wonderful, the most zen soul. Somebody asked me at a book talk the other day, who would you want to read this book of yours? And I think the perfect person, I was like, I imagine David on his bicycle riding around the city and grabbing a copy. But, you know, and he was so game to talk to me about this book. He doesn't shy away from any political conversation because he knows what he did with that music. He knows how far he took that inspiration. Yeah. And I love that.
And now we get to see things like, you know, it seems like they are trying. What I'm doing is I'm backing up to, you know, the atrocities from the very beginning when we're talking about Solomon Linda and the Lion Sleeps and all of that. But now we have the new versions of the Lion King soundtrack and we have the Black Panther soundtrack. And these could have been much like not knocking Elton John's great music in the 90s, but but they're saying we Disney. Can't do that with these soundtracks anymore. And that mm-hmm. seems like the biggest positive step to me in the story that I think you're telling.
Yeah, I love that observation. I think it's beautiful how your mind is thinking now. And especially that's exactly how I wanted people to think when they were reading the book. I think everything happening now is the consequence of people taking action and speaking up, that artists have to be remunerated, artists have to be respected. And I don't think we are not in all roses, this bed of roses right now. I still think there are so many issues happening right now, but at least representation is being much more thoughtful. You know, I did a piece many, many years ago where I got to talk to like an Alan Menken, you know, about all of these compositions for these Disney movies. And, you know, and I have him even in the piece talking about how you need to be thoughtful now. If somebody is writing about a character they know nothing about, bring in the people who know that story. There's nothing better than somebody who has lived that story, whether or not it's, you know, in the micro level or being inspired for their whole lives. There's nothing better than having that person tell that story. And I think with the Black Panther and just like for my experience, seeing, you know, Khoza like on the screen and like hearing it, I mean, I don't know if that would have happened many years ago. I don't know if that language would have been researched well enough, respected. Now we need to be much more thoughtful in, right, we are all human. No thought is original, is it? I don't know. You tell me.
It's not.
It's not, right? And but in having said that, I do think that there's a way that we can really give props to our past and give space for the people that deserve it. There's space for everybody. And I think looking at like a Wakanda and the music, and I watched the new one the other day, and it's mind-blowing how African it feels in the best way possible. And you know that they got the best people on that. And, you know, and more common kind of contemporary ideology is also like in a Drake using like an Uncle Waffles, you know, and kind of being in love with this DJ. And then you have a Black Coffee who gets to, you know, kind of like an Angelique Kidjo. Black Coffee got to then produce and work on Drake's album. So it's a transparent meeting of the minds in the best way that feels very, very inspiring.
Well, and I can say the same thing about your book with this 33 and a third series, because I learned so much from this. So thanks for, you know, just writing the damn thing.
And... oh, God, I'm so tired.
And thanks for taking the time to talk about it.
Such a pleasure. You are amazing. And this is such a treat that you are such a fan. And so am I. And just to be able to get this book out there in the world, if anyone is wondering where to get into this music, if you don't feel like reading and or if you feel like listening, I've made a playlist on Spotify. You can listen to this playlist. Kyle can post about it as well. And that's your gateway. Get in and then stay there. Swim, sleep, lie down.
Yeah, I'll definitely include the link in the playlist. Lior, thank you so much. It's been
thank
so great
you.
Having you here.
I thank you so much.
And my thanks, Lior Phillips. The new 33 and a third book is called South African Popular Music. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Please, please do hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around. Again, you do that, I'm going to give you 3 brand new interviews every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at all the usual podcast spots, including, Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You can grab it at NPR, at WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And then after that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starts at 6 p.m. Eastern. We do lots of classic tracks, lots of new music. You'll get, music news and anniversary spins, bonus interviews as well. A recent show of mine had the music. I played classic tracks from The Replacements and The Soft Boys, Garbage, Morrissey, Kate Bush, Morphine, Beck, LCD Sound System, Radiohead, The Smashing Pumpkins, Veruca Salt, L7, Low, Fiona Apple, Folk Implosion, and I had my interview with Margot Timmons of Cowboy Junkies. It's just a little example of what you can hear every weekday at 6 p.m. at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also catch me on the social media spots. That's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all three of them. My address is at Kyle Meredith. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
In what universe did that actually happen? Because it didn't like happen in mine.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.